This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen joining you. Well, prior to the invention of anesthesia in the mid-1800s, surgeons had to do their work with virtually nothing to dull the patient's pain. But today, we have a combination of drugs that ease pain, relax muscles, and in some cases put us into a deep state of hypnosis that even gives us temporary amnesia. Here with more on all of this is Dr. Colleen O'Leary. She's professor of anesthesiology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. O'Leary.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Let's begin helping us understand what we mean when we say anesthesia. What is it, really?
Most people, when they think of anesthesia, think about a general anesthesia. And what really that is a drug-induced reversible coma. When people come in for an operation and they want to be, quotes, asleep, they're looking for several things. They don't want to remember. They want to be pain-free. They want to be able to wake up at the end of the day. Additionally, the surgeon is looking to have people not move. So some of the agents that we use help relax the muscles, which can make the surgeon's work easier. One of the things that anesthesiologists like to take care of are blunting of things we call autonomic reflexes. If one gets hurt, one's heart rate may slow down or pick up. Blood pressure may change. Those are the kinds of things that we monitor quite closely, and we utilize our medications that are immediately available to us to help control and treat.
Because any of those changes during a surgical procedure could complicate the procedure as well.
It could complicate the procedure, or more importantly, the patient's outcome.
Right. So help us understand the different types, then, of anesthesia, meaning you mentioned general, but there are other, obviously, other types. I mean, there's more local. Explain the different types.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to start with some of the really simple things. If you go to the emergency room to have stitches, or if you go to the dentist's office to have a tooth pulled, you might receive a local anesthetic. And that is simply the person doing the procedure injecting some local anesthetic, something like lidocaine, into the soft tissues around the area where he or she is going to work. And that essentially just numbs up the area. It doesn't change your autonomic reflexes. It doesn't change your vital signs. It doesn't make you go to sleep. Sometimes a surgeon would like to be able to do something with a patient awake but sedated. And sometimes the doctor in the emergency room, or even the dentist who has been specially trained, might give an additional medication. Maybe you'll take a pill before you come to the dentist to help you relax. If you're in the emergency room, you might get something in the IV to kind of take the edge off, or maybe help you forget, like an amnestic, something to help you forget that you ever had to have the stitches to begin with. Sometimes we like to have people a bit more asleep, yet spontaneously breathing, and in that case, the person doing the procedure, the surgeon or the endoscopist, will ask an anesthesiologist to come and to provide something called deeper sedation. Actually, we call that monitored anesthesia care. The patient will likely not remember a whole lot, will be more deeply asleep than if they were to receive just a little bit of sedative, but they're not going to be entirely, quotes, unconscious. They might remember some of the procedure. The next kind that we use would be something called a regional anesthesia. And regional is different than local because with a regional anesthesia, an anesthesiologist will use a needle to inject some local anesthetic around nerve trunks, or in some cases in or around the spinal cord itself. We do a spinal anesthesia, and we mix up the local anesthetic with the spinal fluid in the patient, and that causes a very dense block. It makes you feel like the lower portion of your body belongs to someone else. Sometimes we do an epidural anesthesia. People may be familiar with epidural anesthesia. They're used very frequently for women who are in labor to help get through the discomfort of childbirth. With an epidural anesthetic, the needle is placed just outside the sac that contains the spinal cord, and we still use local anesthetics. And we are able to make just a portion of a patient's abdomen or chest or lower extremities numb, not the whole thing.
So that's a great overview, but I guess the question I wonder about is what determines what you choose? I mean, clearly there are so many concerns or so many requirements in terms of using the correct choice of anesthesia. What are the different variables or the factors that go into your decision making?
First and foremost, how asleep does the patient want to be? There are side effects from anesthesias, and we can talk about those a little bit in a few moments. Yeah. But one of the things that we like to understand is the patient's basic health, the requirements of the surgical procedure. For example, if you go to have a colonoscopy, you don't need to be entirely asleep. If you're going to go and have an operation on your foot, it might be helpful to just numb up the part of the body that's having the operation. And we can do this in one of a number of ways. Now, if we're going to be having open heart surgery, you're going to have a general anesthetic for that because none of the regional or less invasive techniques are going to work. So patient's health and the actual kind of procedure or surgery the patient's going to be having.
So how do you determine, for example, in some, I'm thinking very specifically, let's say you need knee or hip or even back surgery, and you prefer maybe not to take, we'll talk a little bit about what some of the risks and the side effects are with some of these types of anesthesia, but how can you make that choice, or is it safe to make a choice for something like an epidural or a regional block as opposed to general anesthetic for some of those kinds of procedures?
We very commonly do procedures on the lower extremities, your legs, your hips, your knees, your ankles, with a regional anesthesia. We can either use a peripheral nerve block or we can use an epidural or a spinal anesthetic. Frequently, some of these procedures are done in outpatient settings, and in outpatient settings, one would not want to place an epidural or a spinal anesthetic because it's going to leave the patients with an impaired ability to walk for a little while until the block goes away. So we don't want to send people home when they're not stable on their feet. So that's another consideration. Back surgeries in general have to be done with the general anesthetic. We don't want to complicate the surgeon's job or role by placing needles in the area where they might be working.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with anesthesiologist Dr. Colleen O'Leary. We're talking about modern anesthesia today, how to choose, what are the possible problems along with it, and what are the wonderful effects it can offer. So help us understand, what are the side effects then that are the risks associated with the different types?
Local anesthetic is the simplest. It's frequently given with epinephrine, and epinephrine actually causes the blood vessels in the area where the local is being injected to constrict. Some people complain about getting a fast heart rate from the local anesthetic, and it's actually not the local anesthetic at all, it's the epinephrine. So that's one of the side effects from a local anesthesia. Of course, people want to make sure that they are indeed numb, and sometimes with a local anesthetic or with a regional anesthesia, the area that we're intending to make entirely pain-free might not be entirely pain-free, despite an absolutely beautifully performed technique. So we have to be aware of breakthrough pain. For a general anesthetic, the things that we are most concerned about and that certainly have caught the attention of the press, on very rare occasions, people may be what we think is asleep, and they're not. We do use muscle relaxants, so they are effectively unable to move to let the anesthesiologist know that they are indeed awake and feeling pain.
Oh my goodness.
This happens very, very infrequently. There have been some monitoring devices that have been developed that might, we don't know for sure, but might help decrease the risk of those kinds of things. Nothing is guaranteed, unfortunately. So certainly recall, when one doesn't anticipate having recall, is a side effect. When one has a general anesthetic, we use a number of medications.
Yeah, what I was going to ask, what are the modern anesthetics that are used today?
We give medications in the IV to have people go to sleep. Many people are familiar with a drug called sodium pentothal. That's no longer available in the United States. We use something else called propofol. It looks like it's white. It looks kind of like milk, and we inject it into the IV, and it causes fairly rapid loss of consciousness. We're talking, 20, 30 seconds. But the thing is, it doesn't last very long. So we either have to give more of that drug via a continuous infusion, or we have to give other drugs. Generally speaking, most people receive a cocktail, if you will, of medicines, something to help them forget, something to help with pain control, something to keep them asleep, and very often, if you're having a general anesthetic, you'll receive one of our smelly gases to help keep you asleep. What's important, I think, for people to know is that no one drug can provide all of the things that we need from an anesthetic.
So it is a cocktail, as you
said. It is a cocktail.
And every patient must be a little different.
Yes.
So it's the anesthesiology. When you're going into general, because it's the one I think that people are most perhaps anxious about, tell us what's going on. I mean, the anesthesiologist does what?
The anesthesiologist usually, if people are healthy, will give the patient something to help them forget that they ever had to come visit the operating room. And the amnesia that's produced actually starts right from the moment the drug is injected. The patient will be brought back to the operating room. He or she will appear awake but may not remember any of that. We'll place monitors. We always monitor an ECG, a blood pressure, and we put a little device on the finger to measure the patient's oxygen saturation. Anesthesiologists love monitors. And once we have everybody attached to our monitors, we'll then give them oxygen to breathe with a mask, some medications in the IV, and they'll fall asleep. Sometimes, especially for children, to avoid the placement of an intravenous line ahead of time, we'll actually have the patient breathe a combination of oxygen, nitrous oxide, and a smelly gas to actually go to sleep. It takes a little bit longer, and we use it frequently in small children, not so much in adults, because it simply takes longer to go to sleep that way.
Do we understand how these anesthetics work? I mean, in my preparation for talking with you today, I did a little bit of research on my own, and it was uncanny to me that it seemed like they are incredibly effective. They have moved medicine, you know, so far, and yet we don't exactly know how they work.
That is entirely true. I'm always amazed that I, as someone who is very obsessive compulsive, have entered a field where I do not know exactly how the drugs that I use every day work. Not only don't I know, nobody knows. And this is a very active area of research today.
They are trying to figure it out.
We are. And most simply put, we believe that anesthetic drugs, despite whether they're given intravenously or via a breathing tube, one of the smelly gases, we believe that they interfere somehow with how the neurons in the brain communicate with each other. And this interference produces the things that we call general anesthesia.
So you're really on the verge of a coma, or you're in a coma, and yet you can reverse it. It seems remarkable.
Correct.
Totally remarkable.
It is remarkable. The medications that we give, we didn't really talk about how do we get rid of them. If we are giving a smelly gas, we turn off
gas. We keep saying smelly gas. What do we mean, smelly gas?
There are three, we call them gases. They're really vapors, and they are potent anesthetic agents that smell.
Oh, okay.
And they produce profound sleep, some muscle relaxation, and some amnesia.
So that's the smelly gas. So you get rid of them by?
We turn off the gas and people breathe them out. And when enough concentration is gone from the body, people wake up, and it happens fairly quickly.
So what's ahead in this field? I mean, obviously, are you where you want to be? We only have a few seconds left.
I think one of the great challenges will be to understand how anesthesias work, and we always are trying to develop agents or drugs to use that have fewer and fewer side effects.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so very much. It's so fascinating. I think so many of us who have been experienced or had to have had surgical procedures of some kind worry about general anesthesia or anesthesia in general. And in general, thank you so much for helping us understand it so much better. My guest has been Dr. Colleen O'Leary, professor of anesthesiology and at Upstate Medical University. Once again, thanks so much for coming in,
Dr.
O'Leary.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.